number 07-5339. Frederick C. Douglass, Jr., appellant versus Steve Preston, Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. Mr. Selden for the appellant, Ms. Lyons for the appellee.
If it please the court, on four occasions in the last several years, the D.C. Circuit has had the opportunity to address the issue of the actionability of bonuses paid by an employer. The first of these decisions was the Russell decision authored by Judge Rogers. The second was also authored by Judge Rogers, and that was the Burke decision. In the first decision, Chief Judge Ginsburg had the opportunity to sit on the panel and joined in the majority opinion, and he wrote the opinion in the third and fourth cases, Taylor and Weber.
Let's start with Russell.
Yes, sir.
Where Judge Rogers writes, the department conceded at oral argument that the size of Russell's bonus was directly tied to her performance rating. A higher rating would have automatically meant a larger bonus. That doesn't seem to be the situation in this case.
Well, I would say
the nomination didn't guarantee anything.
Right. I think that is a factual question, which I would get to. Judge Rogers certainly did not say that explicitly based on the government's concession at the argument. However, in the Weber case in 2007, Chief Judge Ginsburg, you wrote, so too here, though performance awards are indeed optional with the employer, the record shows that the board had opted to give the plaintiff in that case awards in the previous years.
As a realistic matter in Weber, there was a one-to-one correspondence between the ratings and the bonuses or whatever the benefit was. So it wasn't provided in their manual, but in fact, that's what it appeared to be. If you got the rating, you got the benefit.
That happened. I'm sorry, sir.
The record suggests that it's highly discretionary that perhaps half the people who are nominated get an award, so that there's no way to equate nomination with benefit or failure of nomination with loss of benefit.
I'd like to address that in two ways, if I may, sir, first factually and then legally. In fiscal year 2003, the year that is at issue in this case, the departmental head nominated Margaret Young, and she in due turn got the nomination by the Performance Review Board. That was the end of proceedings before HUD, and then she got it when it went through the remainder of the process. So for fiscal year 2003, there was an 80% chance if you got nominated by the departmental head. And perhaps more important, what it showed in that
80% looking at what?
What's fiscal year 2003.
Right. Who's not? What nominations are you looking at? HUD or something larger?
Well, I'm looking at the HUD nominations, the only ones that are in the record.
And how many were there?
There were four, and all four got the award.
So how's that 80%?
Well, I would gone back and talked about the departmental heads, which is where the process started. You were asking me about the automatic part. I could only say you had an 80% chance if you got a departmental head nomination. You had a 100% chance if you got the nomination by the Performance Review Board.
Right. And overall, over a longer period of time, what's the ratio? Isn't it about 50%?
I think it's 66, as I recall. But what we know is that fiscal year 2003 is the only year that this official nominated anybody. That is the only year that he nominated anybody whatsoever. I'd like, though, to go back to the legal point.
I'm sorry, the year in question here is the only year when he nominated anybody.
Correct.
And that he didn't nominate anyone in earlier or later years?
No, sir.
Okay.
And his nominee got the award that year.
Right, okay.
What I'd like to do is perhaps return to the first, the Russell case, because what all of this concerns is this sort of elliptical reference by the Rabinowitz case, which came out of the Seventh Circuit. I think Judge Rogers had it correct when she said the notion of whether it's discretionary or automatic would be a perverse logic, I think were her words. Let's just say I, as an employer, purchased a small business, and I have 10 employees, 5 white, 5 black. And at the end of the year, I say to my employees, you know, I don't have any employment standards of this, but I'm giving every one of the white employees a $10,000 bonus, and I'm giving none to any of the black employees. Now, under the reasoning that Judge Kennedy, and strangely enough, he had a totally different view of this in the Carroll case, where he ruled 180 degrees in the opposite direction. Under that reasoning, if I favor every single white employee over every single black employee, even if I admit I did it for racial reasons, since it's completely discretionary, that couldn't be challenged. That is indeed a perverse result. And that is why I believe Judge Rogers said that in the
decision. Well, now, wait a minute. It might not be challenged under Title VII, but it might be challengeable under the 14th Amendment.
Well, not if it's the federal government, sir.
The Fifth Amendment, pardon me.
You couldn't challenge the federal government under that either. The only place in an employment context the federal government could be challenged is Title VII. That's clear by. And I'm sorry, this is my field, which is why I'm saying this, Brown versus GSA by the Supreme Court, which has been applied many, many times by this circuit, Keyes versus Webster on Bach. And this is my field. I don't mean to.
Go ahead. Sorry.
And so we come up with that basic principle. The notion is just because it's discretionary, which in this case, it really wasn't. I mean, it was to some degree, but we know the secretary and the deputy secretary didn't participate in this process. What we know in the end is that if you got Mr. Weicker's nomination, the woman got the award. And what we know is that Mr. Douglas did.
He gave it once and she got the award.
Yes, right. That's it.
Here's the district court. The district court looks at a period 99 to 2004.
Right.
32 candidates nominated by department heads, 16 received an award.
Right.
50%. Now, whether it's 50% or 66%, it is highly discretionary, correct?
I would say it's discretionary. I would say the real thing is that it's not automatic. I don't know. I hate to pick words there.
Far from automatic. if it's not entirely discretionary, it may be because there are certain criteria that are impermissible if you could ever find that they were used.
Well, there are criteria, although they're not mentioned in the government's statement of material facts.
Well, I'm looking at SES criteria J82.
Yes.
Presidential Rank Awards Program.
Okay.
Right. These are the applicable criteria, are they not?
If they're the ones that say leadership, leading people, driving change.
That's right.
Yes, those are the five criteria that are essentially the way performance is described for most, if not all, professional and very senior employees in the federal government. They're not mechanical. They don't say resulted in the approval of 12 mortgage decisions.
No, they're judgmental.
Correct. The sort of criteria that are challenged every day in senior level promotional employment cases. They're not really any different. In our view, this case comes down to is a question of fact. There was nothing in the government's Rule 56 statement that said why Ms. Young was nominated in terms of her qualifications. There was nothing in the government's Rule 56 statements that said why Mr. Douglas was not. There was nothing attesting to the fact that she was the superior candidate. And the fact remains that we relied upon here the lack of credibility, among other things, that his credentials were superior. We relied on the lack of credibility of the nominating official who denigrated Mr. Douglas's performance in a totally different way than the exceptional performance rating that he had given Mr. Douglas at the same time, within exactly the same time period. So we relied on this circuit's en banc decision in ACCA and Judge Brown's decision in Holcomb versus Powell, saying that when there is a credibility determination, when there's something that really departs from what was done credibility-wise, that is sufficient as a challenge, as a matter of fact. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, if I may.
Thank you. morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. The presidential rank awards that we're discussing this morning recognize career senior executive service members who exemplify the highest level of integrity, leadership, and personal conduct, and who have demonstrated exceptional performance over an extended period of time. The context of these awards is what drives the distinction between this case and the Russell case. This case does not flow from a performance evaluation. In this case, the individual who recommended Ms. Young had available for him to select approximately half a dozen of his senior executive service people, and he picked Ms. Young. I think the fact emphasized by appellant's counsel that this is the only year in which this official nominated anybody emphasizes that it's there's just not enough to draw any kind of inference that was based on race. He had a different view of her qualifications than he had of Mr. Douglas's. That's what it comes down to. But focusing on the adverse action issue, this is a very different context than the sort of routine awards that are given out every year by agencies. And there's a large gap in the process between the recommendation and the ultimate receipt of the award. It includes all the way up to the level of the exercise of discretion by the President of the United States. This is a very high honor, and it's not something that any employee really has any expectation of in the way that they have if they, I can't remember which case off the top of my head, but one of the cases, it's a NLRB employee who had received a bonus all or nearly all of the years of a 20-year employment with the agency. This is not that context. This is very, very different. All of the members of the SES service are expected to perform at a very high level, and this is an award to recognize particularly exceptional performance. Mr. Douglas, the record reflects, had received a nomination 2 years before in fiscal year 2001. He did not receive the award in the year in which he was nominated by the agency.
What is your response to the plaintiff's reliance on Cohn versus Shalala?
My recollection of the Cohns versus Shalala case is that it focused mainly on the similarly situated nature of employees. Your Honor, is that what you're referring to?
No, I'm referring to it held that it's discussed in the, they make their argument at pages 28 to 29 of their brief. And in Cohn, we held that failure to advertise a position competitively was an adverse action. And we said, quote, the crux of Cohn's complaint is that refusing to allow him to compete was tantamount to refusing to promote him. And, you know, it seems to me it's similar here. Weicker, is that his name, Weicker?
Weicker.
Yeah, Weicker essentially refused to allow plaintiff to compete for the award.
I disagree with that, Your Honor. The record reflects that he considered all of the people that were eligible for the award, and he selected Ms. Young.
Right, but that's no different than Cohn, where the allegation was that for racial reasons, I think it was race, they refused to advertise the job. Now, there was no, in Cohn, it was certainly not certain that the plaintiff would get the job, right? It was just advertising it. And in Cohn, we said that doesn't make any difference because by refusing to advertise the job for racial reasons, you basically made it impossible for him to even compete for the job.
That's a very different context.
Why?
What we have here, because Mr. Douglas was considered and was eligible, and he was considered by Mr. Weicker as a possible candidate for nomination.
No, but his refusal to nominate him made it impossible for him to be considered for the award at a higher level. It's exactly the same.
I disagree respectfully, Your Honor. The opportunity, denying someone the opportunity to compete for a position means they never get an opportunity even to put their credentials before you. In this case, Mr. Weicker is familiar with Mr. Douglas's credentials and his work.
The supervisor in Cohn was familiar with the employee's qualifications also and refused to advertise the job.
We're still talking about the terms or conditions of a job in a way that are fundamentally different from receiving an award of this magnitude from the President of the United States. Title VII focuses on the terms and working conditions and benefits of a job, which I think you're talking about from the Combs case, but when you're talking about the receipt...
So suppose nomination by the Weicker was automatic, that you would get the award. Would you still argue that it wouldn't be covered because it's the President of the United States?
I'm not sure I completely can understand your hypothetical.
Well, I only asked the question because you said this is very different from a promotion because this is a judgment made by the President of the United States. I thought your point was that it wasn't automatic.
It isn't automatic.
Okay, but it doesn't have anything to do with the fact that it's the President, does it?
Only insofar as it's a person from outside the agency and an independent actor who doesn't have any information about Mr. Douglas in
right.
front of him when this decision's made.
I mean, it wouldn't make any difference if it was the President or the Secretary, right? I mean, either way, your argument is it's not automatic.
That's right.
And that's why I asked you about Cohn. Because in Cohn, it wasn't automatic that the applicant would get the job if it was properly advertised, and we said that didn't make a difference. Because by refusing to advertise the job, you were preventing the person from competing for the job. And that's essentially what happened here. They're preventing Douglas from competing at a higher level for the award. So.
I've tried to distinguish the situation the best I can, Your Honor. I'm not sure what I can add.
Well, I asked because you didn't deal with it in your brief. That's all. So, okay.
I mean, to be equivalent to the Cohn case, Mr. Weicker would have had to nominate all the SES employees in his area to give them all an equal opportunity to go to the Performance Review Board. In fiscal year 2003, the year that we're talking about in this case, six employees went forward to the Performance Review Board for HUD, four made it out and went on, and all four received the award. Mm-hmm. So even if Mr. Weicker had nominated all six, including Mr. Douglas, to the Performance Review Board, there's at least some evidence to suggest not all of them would have gone forward. And that's why the difference between this case and Russell is so stark, where something automatically flows from the decision made by the person with the alleged discriminatory motive.
In your brief, you at least made the argument that he had failed to exhaust his administrative remedies. Now, the district court didn't agree with you, but have you abandoned that argument?
No, Your Honor. We continue to advance that argument, and I'm happy to address it. That argument essentially boils down to one of reasonableness. Mr. Douglas, when he pursued his administrative remedies, focused repeatedly on the failure of Mr. Weicker to meet with him to discuss the award, which is yet another step removed from getting the nomination and getting the award. But the failure to meet with someone is what the EEO investigator, and that's the perspective we need to apply, the EEO investigator going out to investigate the claim would focus on different acts or conducts or omissions by Mr. Weicker if the allegation is a failure to meet. I would submit that a reasonable investigator would go out and ask Mr. Weicker if he routinely or always declined to meet with minorities, or what was his practice with regard to meeting with regard to these awards. While the record now reflects that Mr. Weicker did not meet with any of the people under his supervision who were eligible for the award, that's the sort of conduct that the investigator would be focusing on, and it didn't fairly put the agency on notice that what Mr. Douglas was really complaining
really?
About was the step down the road.
You say the agency wasn't on notice?
The agency wasn't on notice of the complaint.
Let me read you a sentence from the EEO report. The complaint alleges that Weicker discriminated against him in not recommending him for an SES bonus and the Presidential Rank Award.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, where are you reading from?
I'm reading from... I don't have the site. I'm reading from the EEO report itself on the complaint.
Counselor's report?
Let me see. Um, I don't have the site. I wrote down it's the EEO. Maybe it's the counselor's report. The point is it whether it's the counselor or the EEO, is the counselor report the only one that's here?
I have an EEO counselor report. What we focused on more...
My only point is that the whoever did this report knew that the complaint was for not recommending him for an SCS bonus and for a presidential rank award. Oh, wait a minute. Here it is. Hold on. I don't have the JA.
I'm looking at JA 346, if that helps. That's the EEO counselor's report. And under the allegations of discrimination...
What about the EEO report?
I'm sorry, what do you mean when you say EEO report? What our argument is focused on is what Mr. Weichert himself did and said on the
I'm reading a sentence. I'm sorry, I don't have the site, but it says... It describes the complaint as saying that the complaint alleges that Weicker discriminated against him in not recommending him for an SCS bonus or a presidential rank award.
I'm feeling you may be reading from the final decision.
Where is it?
Well, there's an EEO counselor's report at 346.
Right. The EEO counselor's report clearly states that the allegation is that Mr. Weicker refused to meet with you on December 11th, 2002, to discuss the possibility of a recommendation for the prestigious presidential rank award. That's how it's described there. In Mr. Weicker's informal complaint, which he signed, and that appears at JA 349, once again, the allegation is that Mr. Weicker refused to meet with you.
Try JA 225.
JA 225 is part of the report of investigation itself.
Right. The complaint.
It does there. You're correct, Your Honor. It does reflect that he did not recommend him for a senior executive service bonus in
and a presidential rank.
But
award.
Those three allegations were dismissed as untimely in the final agency decision.
I only pointed it to you because you said they weren't on notice, and obviously they understood what the complaint was.
But there's a difference between the senior executive service bonus in 2002 that's referenced in bullet point number one and the award that we're talking about in this case. Different year and a different award. The fourth allegation is the one about the presidential rank award, and that is once again specified as a failure to meet with him regarding a recommendation for the president rank award. So that's entirely consistent with our contention that the agency was not fairly put on notice by either the informal complaint, which is relatively short, or Mr. Douglas's EEO complaint, which is longer, but emphasizes that the most egregious conduct is the failure to meet. And we simply also point out that this is a person who is at the highest level of government service, and he's represented by counsel during this process. And despite having a notice of acceptance of the agency of what the allegation was, which also again confirms that it's the failure to meet, and having been directed to contact the agency, if that statement of the complaint was incorrect in any way, Mr. Douglas failed to do so. For that reason, because the failure to nominate is so attenuated from actually received failure to meet to discuss the nomination is so attenuated from the actual receipt of the award, that one does not naturally flow from the other, and Mr. Douglas failed to exhaust his administrative remedies. For all of these reasons, unless there are any more questions, appellee respectfully requests that this court affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you, Ms. Lyons.
Before getting into the meat of the rebuttal, what limited time I have, I need to correct a misstatement that I made in response to Chief Judge Ginsburg's question. Chief Judge Ginsburg, I believe you asked me if in the Weber case didn't the government concede that the award was automatic.
Well, I asked if that's what it didn't say. From the opinion.
That's what happened in the Russell case, the first one.
Russell, yeah.
And in the Weber case, actually, I have this printed up on Westlaw. The pages will be different. It talks about the fact that Weber had gotten an award in each of the 3 years before the discrimination in question, not that he would automatically always get an award, We have much more persuasive evidence here in terms of the difference in treatment. We have Mr. Weicker's own assessment contemporaneously that Mr. Douglas had met.
The administrative policy circular flatly states, quote, the results of performance appraisals serve as the basis for performance award decisions. That was their policy.
The basis.
Yeah, that was the basis. If you got the high performance appraisal, then you got the performance award.
No, I don't read it that way. I don't have the right page numbers. I'm sorry, sir, because it's a Westlaw printout.
185.
Yes, but, well, I can find them. Okay. Yeah.
Well, it's in the paragraph beginning, unlike the board, under Part B, fourth paragraph.
Yes. It says for a reasonable jury to conclude. Doesn't say that that's the way it went, I believe. I believe the actual statement is what happened later. The holding is that though performance awards are indeed optional with the employer, the record shows the board had opted to give Weber an award in each of the years. The question was that a jury could determine from there that he would have gotten the award, not that on summary judgment the employer eliminated that possibility. I'd like to just turn for a moment.
Do you have anything at HUD that says if you get the high appraisal, we nominate you for a presidential award?
No, it has to be a separate appraisal. Simply a question of what a jury might believe, which is the standard on summary judgment. On the issue of on what Mr. Douglas put the agency on notice of, there's a sequence of events and a factual occurrence here. If you look at the counselor's report on page 347, you will see that what Mr. Douglas asked as a remedy was to be given a salary increase in the amount equal to the presidential rank award, which was $48,000 at its highest possible level. Weicker was asked why he didn't give Douglas the award in the EO process, and everyone was interviewed. The sequence of events is very important, exhaustion-wise, in terms of understanding this and the EO.
Let me ask you just a clarification.
Yes, sir.
Since this is your field. At 225, we were told by Ms. Lyons that point one regarding the senior executive service bonus in 2002 is a different award, and I think she said also a different time period.
I think she's right about what she said.
Okay.
I think she's right. But I think when you go through the record.
It's point four that if this was raised, it was raised on point four.
I have to look at page 225.
Where it failed to meet with him, et cetera, regarding a recommendation.
Right. But then that's exactly right. And then it's the way the process worked its way out. If we look at the counselor's report on 347, what you'll see is that he asked for the award. Everyone was asked about who got the award. The investigator did. He asked Mr. Weicker to explain why he didn't.
We're on 347.
If we look in the remedy requested, for example, and that's right in the counselor's report, recognition to be recommended for a presidential rank award and that has caused his loss of $48,000, for example,
right.
And that's asked during the process. What I'd like to explain is the sequence of the process, if I could. I think it would answer the court's question.
At 346, the allegation of discrimination is refused to meet with him. Discuss the possibility of a recommendation for a prestigious presidential award. The remedy requested to which you're referring, I guess, is what the complainant asked for because he was not given the meeting he wanted.
Correct.
Right? But that is, where did he make that request, I guess is my question.
The request for the award.
This remedy. Was it during the course of the investigation or in the complaint that he filed?
Well, I think it is in the remedy request. It is on 347, and I need to look somewhere.
I understand, but that's in the EO counselor's report. And he's saying that the plaintiff here requested this remedy, and I'm just saying, well, when and where did he request it? It's not obvious to me that it's in the – well, it doesn't appear at 225. They don't deal with remedy.
I need to explain the sequence of events, if I could, sir. What happens is – the award process begins with a meeting. I'm sorry, begins with the nomination by the department head, and that nomination goes forward to OPM at the beginning of 2003. The award itself is not given out until October. Okay. And so what happens is at that point, Mr. Douglas commences the process. Now, if you look at the EEOC regulations, what it says is when the case is before the agency shall dismiss a complaint. And this is 29 CFR 1614.107. The agency shall dismiss a complaint if the complaint only alleges a discrimination in a preliminary step to taking a personnel action. And that's under A5. So what happened in the course of the investigation here, who got the award and why, and who met what standards, And what did Mr. Weicker reply? And by the way, he never considered Mr. Douglas at all. And AUSA Lyons is wrong about that. She wasn't the AUSA in the case. He never considered Mr. Douglas because Mr. Douglas had already been involuntarily reassigned by Mr. Weicker to the Ginnie Mae executive office at that point. And he refused just to consider him, he says, for that reason. So he never thought about Mr. Douglas at all. He was not under consideration. During the process, the agency was given notice that what was at issue was the award. That was it, plain and simple. And if they didn't believe that, they had to, it says shall under the EEOC regulations, they had to dismiss the complaint if they viewed this as only a preliminary step in that process. They viewed what Mr. Douglas to be talking about, and as came out through this, based on the interviews of the investigator and his opportunity to say to Mr. Weicker, why didn't you nominate him for the award, they viewed this as a challenge on a discrimination basis to Mr. Douglas not being given the award. I'm way over my time now, unless the court has questions.
The report of investigation at 224, where does that fit in the sequence?
I'm sorry, at 224?
Yeah.
And I'll just show you on 221, and then I'll go to 224. This is the formal complaint, by the way. And it says, recognition, Mr. Douglas seeks recognition through monetary award in an amount of 35% of complainant's salary. That's the amount of a presidential rank award for consideration.
You're at 221?
221.
Item, remedies, and that's?
Mr. Douglas is in his formal complaint, his request for remedies. Yeah. He wants the amount of money equal to a presidential rank award. He can't ask the award at that point because it's going to actually come out later.
So this is his document, right?
Right, that he is requesting, that then became the subject of the report of investigation.
This was what initiates the process?
Correct.
Okay. Then we get the report of investigation starting at 224.
Correct.
Which, by the way, at the bottom of 225 recounts, I believe, just what you've now said. Last paragraph.
Yes, the complainant alleges that Mr. Weicker discriminated against him in not recommending him for an SES bonus, that's the separate issue,
right,
and the presidential rank award for 2002. And there was an argument about whether it should be called 2002 or 2003 in the district court, which I'll spare you, but that's why it says 2002 there. It was fiscal year 2003. Okay. I'm way over my time. Unless you've got questions, I'll sit down.
Questions? No. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Lyons. Case is submitted.